Radio. The clouds of harmonic constraint are gradually lifting, revealing a new openness towards discordant notes whose stems, taken collectively, are longer than the sum of each musically randy, that is to say, random part. To put this another way, the sounds your ear are currently processing and trying to decide how best to present to your brain without causing acute ontological discombobulation would not be possible before May 27 of this year. To restate this in terms familiar to anyone who has ever been locked up in a lunatic asylum for 27 years, such as Count Donatien Alphonse François de Sade, the death anniversary it serendipitously happens to be today, it's episode 28 of Calvos and Damien's New Music Sesquihour Expansive. This week, broadcasting from our remote radiophonic site in a duck blind overlooking our normal Sesqui studio, which has been temporarily evacuated pending investigation of a small ticking package in the mail room, which coincidentally happened to be the first piece of mail addressed to Calvos and Damien. So we await the discovery of its contents with resolve. And ducks. The snow squalls which blew through the area earlier today, adding to December's normal weather woes, have disrupted many a broadcast afternoon, and as a public service, the New Music Sesquihour Meteorological Upheaval Advisory Panel now presents a list of radio stations which are closed or otherwise inert today. WBOB, WKJR, the Virgin's Radiophone Consortium, and WOOW are all closed. WHAH's Ampersand Hour will be rebroadcast at 7 p.m. WJAM is experiencing technical difficulties with its radar detection system and expects to be off the air until Tuesday. WHAR, which has been missing from the airwaves for over a month, continues to be missing, and additional information continues to be not available at this time. WBLT is closed today pending a shipment of whole wheat toasts. WBB King is on the air, we're just not sure where. And Vermont Pirate Radio is back off the air again, following another protracted skirmish from disenchanted stockholders at last night's board meeting. This just in, to adjust rhetorical deficiencies, backlog of Calvos and Damien's New Music Antimatter Displacement System, or Le Flambeau Orange.
Bon Le Flambeau Orange.
Radio station WGDR will be off the air for the next 6 minutes. Correction, that should read 6 seconds. And this concludes today's report from the NEM-SMU Advisory Panel. And ducks. This portion of Calvos and Damien's New Music Sesquihour Expansive is... well, it just is. What more can be said? Today is also the 53rd anniversary of the first man-made nuclear chain reaction, courtesy of the Bronx Division of the Manhattan Project, without which modern-day conceptual artists would be unable to microwave cadavers for use in performance arts. It's also the 5th anniversary of the final chord of Aaron Copland, a 20th century composer whose works will be featured in an upcoming episode when Kolvas is out of earshot of the studio due to a severe allergy to Copland and his gymnastics tutor, Nadia Boulanger.
Earshot? What's an earshot?
It's a rhetorical statement that
it
I
is.
Have to figure out
indeed.
One of these days.
Well, I'll get out of mouth shop.
Did I say earshot?
You said earshot.
I'll have to think about
that. It must be the Christmas season.
Dr. Freud, are you listening? And speaking of allergies and their corollaries, symphonies, here's the spokesperson for the only large orchestra composer, never to have composed for a large orchestra and still regretted it, Calvo.
How does one respond? I've regretted every note I've written at some time or other, including today.
Today.
Today. We were listening, have been, will have been listening. No, we have
Pluperfect,
been listening. Pluperfectly listening to the first movement of Stanley Myers' concerto. Concerto for soprano saxophone. A very sweet tune. Let's listen a little bit more of it while we... Ah, there we are. We're beginning the second movement of that. Stanley Myers' last piece he wrote, and played by John Harl and the Argo Symphony Orchestra. Wouldn't you like to direct something called the Argo Symphony Orchestra?
In Argyle, in Argyle suits.
We could be reported regularly in the Times Argus. And yes, true enough.
It goes on.
And we could play music from Jason and the Argonauts.
More and more don't stop now.
I ran out of args. We have a guest today. We have George Todd has come through the snows and sleet and the ice and wind, and some of the roads were even closed on the interstate this morning. I don't know how he made it here. He's come up from the great land of Middlebury on the west coast of Vermont. He's a west coast baby. Come on up to see us. He'll be on the show at 3. And we'll hear some of his music. And we're also celebrating, not today, but 2 days from now. So since we're not on 2 days from now, we'll celebrate today the death of Frank Zappa.
And show how he was a direct influence on Igor Stravinsky and Edgar Varèse.
Yes.
People don't understand that. They
absolutely
sometimes have it reversed.
Varèse and Stravinsky were in awe. And who else? Powell and just the whole crew of them.
Yes.
Well, let's de-smooth ourselves, because I think Stanley Myers is just a little too smooth.
Yeah, in fact, I had expected something a little snappier.
Snappier, I know that. We're about to have snappy.
Oh, good.
We'll start with a little of the familiar Zappa, the little Zappa that people may recall. This is not Rocking with the Doctor, folks. This is indeed Calvos and Damien's New Music Sesqui Hour, but we're going to celebrate the death of Frank Zappa right here with Peaches and Regalia. Well, it might sound tame, but it still sounds fresh. That's Frank Zappa, Peaches and Regalia. That's from 1970.
Yeah.
1970. And to be serious, if we can, for a moment, Zappa was, from his early days, a composer of a lot of other kinds of things. Concert music, which almost never got played. In his autobiography called The Real Frank Zappa Book, he talks about the dots on paper that is the curse of the composer, and how he could never find musicians who could play this stuff. He absolutely couldn't find them. And it made him mad, so he started a rock and roll band. And he said, you can learn my stuff, and basically they did. Many of the riffs, many of the live riffs, like on Peaches and Regalia, they're all played by musicians who were essentially unschooled in reading the stuff off the page, so Zappa taught him how to play it. And in a sense, to show up the performers in the classical realm, it was quite a fight that he had for a lot of years.
But to add how he then went on to the Synclavier because he couldn't get other musicians to play even more complex.
That's right. Well, actually, that's sort of what we're going to hear, because we're going to play a cut from many years later, from 13 years later, from, I think it's 13 years later, if I have that right. No, 16 years later. This is from Jazz from Hell, and this is something called The Beltway Bandits. And because he couldn't get these performers that he desperately, desperately needed, and he'd run out of patience with sort of the rock and roll world, he turned to the Synclavier, which was the first of the really, really capable electronic instruments. Today, gosh, we got the power of the Synclavier in these $500 units, but at the time it was a very expensive piece in the multiple tens of thousands of dollars. Anyway, he turned to that and started creating stuff that otherwise couldn't be played. So let's listen to, from Jazz from Hell, Beltway Bandits. Beltway Bandits. That's from Frank Zappa's CD, Jazz from Hell. That was from 1986. Gosh, Zappa, an amazing composer. You know, knowing his pop stuff and stuff like this, you say, well, okay, you know, that's the kind of guy he was, wild and crazy and everything. He was an absolute madman perfectionist.
Yeah, I don't suppose you have a copy of his piece that begins, Hit It Zubin.
I don't. What I got, though, is a set of pieces called The Perfect Stranger and Other Chamber Works. And this is Pierre Boulez, who is the great great granddaddy, in a way, of the steely school of composing and performing, the guy who kind of got thrown out of conducting the New York Philharmonic because he couldn't make Mozart swing. Well, anyway, Boulez did conduct Zappa on this recording called The Perfect Stranger with the Ensemble Entre Contemporains and the Barking Pumpkin Digital Gratification Consort.
One follows the other just right.
It does indeed. And let's listen to a little bit of The Perfect Stranger. This is, we're going to run this on a cassette, so here it is.
Thank you. Thank you.
What did you say?
I didn't say anything.
Okay. And you thought you knew Frank Zappa. There it is. The Perfect Stranger, from a cassette entitled The Perfect Stranger. Pierre Boulez dancing as best as he can in front of the Ensemble Intercontemporain and the Barking Pumpkin Digital Gratification Consort. Listening to the Calvos and Damien New Music Sesquihour on WGDR Plainfield.
Oh, all right. I'll get it one of these days. I know.
I figured I'd coach you this time. This is one of those, listen and learn tapes.
Oh, lesson
Very good, very good. We'll play more of that Zappa, that Frank Zappa, the very same one who had that Mothers of Invention rock and roll band, the same. Read his biography, the real Frank Zappa book, his autobiography, incredible bit of writing, very nice and nasty, as you know him to be. And
speaking of nasty,
for our quiz.
Oh, that was the quiz.
That, in fact, was the quiz. If you have a copy of this recording, Let's Just See Zappa fans out there, give us a call. 454-7762. We'll take your calls anytime in the next hour, during which we will interview and be entertained by and banter with and have a good time with... with George Todd, who is here. George Todd is our guest on the Sesquihour. And he's getting comfy over there. Yes, and welcome to the show.
Hi, guys.
Hi there. George has come up from Middlebury. He has been a composer of remarkable music for a very long time, and music which is unusual and different, and we're going to hear all about it. Well, first of all, how long have you been in Vermont most of your life?
I've been in Middlebury 30 years.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, gosh, that's most of my life. No. And then where were you before that?
I was raised in outside of, I grew up outside of Chicago, Evanston. Went to school in Massachusetts and lived in San Francisco and then lived in Germany and then in New Jersey and then came up here.
And in New Jersey. So that was the trigger. You spent a little time in New Jersey and that just sprung you right up to Vermont.
That did.
So tell us about what you do in your composition and what you do at Middlebury. Kind of mix them together because I understand you're one of the really fine guiders of students there in their compositional careers.
Well, thank you very much. I wonder if they think so.
I think they do. That's where I heard it. So
we've had a studio at Middlebury since 1970. We started with a little. Or was it 72 or so with a little ARP 2000? You remember those machines, or 2100?
Little analog synthesizers. Yeah,
little analog synthesizers. When we held classes in a room about this size, a little larger than a closet.
Well, this is Studio A. This is a monumental with the banquet of food on the other on the other wall.
And quite early on, I got I went to Dartmouth on an exchange. Teaching assignment, and just when the Synclavier was starting, and the Synclavier was developed, as you know,
yes,
at Dartmouth.
Right there.
And the machine that they had at the stage that I was working with, it was really in its prototype stage. And at the end of the day, I had to record everything on analog tape that I had because I couldn't figure out how to get it to remember anything.
Oh, yeah. Was that before they had a memory sequencer box with it? Or anything?
Well, they had it, but I just didn't know how to make it work properly. I mean, I really had to learn by the seat of my pants. But at any rate, when I came back to Middlebury, I begged the president of the college, then Olin Robison.
Olin Robison, whose commentaries can be heard at Vermont Big Pockets Radio every once in a while, yeah.
I said, oh, please, boss, get me one of these Synclaviers so that I can live the rest of my life in bliss, and bless his heart, he did. And ever since then, I have been working primarily with the voice, not in the kind of standard ways, not bel canto voice. I don't write songs.
Right.
But I use the voice as the kind of my orchestral palette, and I do it through a resynthesis program.
Speaking of palette, did you know that a few weeks ago we did have an introduction that featured some news about bel canto? It means with food. It was invented by Donizetti, and never mind.
Donizetti, isn't that drink that aperitif? Exactly. Donizetti, I have a big cup of Donizetti right here, right now.
Donizetti so much? Something like that.
And he's a close relative of that Washington composer, Yeti, isn't that his name? Sasquatch Yeti. Anyway, the Synclavier, which you're talking about, just to tie it together, that was indeed the instrument that we were hearing on the Frank Zappa recording before that.
Yes, it was.
Right.
And he was one of the early owners of one of these, and right. lots of important groups and musicians used the Synclavier because it was more than a synthesizer. It is, even though the Synclavier company as of that time has since gone under. There is another Synclavier company now, but the inventors of it are no longer together. That machine was different from anything that has happened before or since in that it was a digital music system, and you could do all kinds of things with it besides synthesize.
Right, right.
And I used the kind of front end of the program of the system to analyze, to make what are called FFTs, fast Fourier transforms.
That's right. That's taking a sound wave in the form we normally see it represented, which is as sort of peaks and valleys, and re-looking at it through a kind of a telescope of where the frequencies are and how the patterns of frequencies fall.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's very well put. And you kind of get the frequency amplitude recipe
right.
of the sound.
Right.
And then you can reproduce it. And this is very wonderful because once you've reproduced it, you can then edit it any way you like. The thing about maybe we should play one of these.
Let's give just a quick example of what that editing involves, and
okay.
We'll just sort of do it. I'll do it in a physical way because if I take my voice, I can edit my voice with my hands, mm-hmm. and by changing where I position my hands, I can change the sound of my voice. It hasn't changed the way the sound was produced at its point of origin, but I've kind of put an editing filter on it, a way mm-hmm. of changing the sound of my voice just by moving my hands in front of the microphone.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way, you can look at that sound. You can observe that sound and say, I understand what that sound is made up of, the components of that sound. And by understanding that, I can then change them and change the color and texture and feel and flavor.
Yes, and not only that, not only in the frequency domain, which is going to change the color, but
right.
in the time domain.
Right.
So that you can make the sounds. Well, we'll listen to
yes,
a couple of
listen.
My pieces. For instance, this is a set of pieces that is just a study of six words. I think I use those six words in this particular set that's here. They're water, asleep, green, idea, furiously, and word.
Word.
And you can, I'll tell you the story of those after we listen to them, why I chose those particular words. But at any rate, each of those words has been analyzed, and then I have given them some kinds of musical manipulations. And occasionally you will actually hear the sampled voice
yes.
of somebody saying this word, but by and large you won't be able to recognize them. But if you pay attention to them, you'll hear the R sounds.
Right.
You'll even hear the S sibilances. Mm-hmm. There's a little cricket sound in Water Asleep that is made up of manipulation I did of the S in Furiously.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is a wonderful piece. Regular listeners to our show have heard this before. We have played it before. It's an extraordinary piece. I've lived with it a long time because I heard it in in concert at one point, and I heard it played in one other presentation, and I've owned the CD for a while, and it is absolutely a glorious piece. Let's listen to it.
Thank you. Thank you.
What's playing right now? The caller asks. That's Wordscapes by our guest on Calvus and Damien's New Music Sesquihour, George Todd. Reiterate for us, if you will, how that's made and if you can tell us how to listen to a piece like that. It is certainly not a combination of sounds that's familiar.
Well, I think musically very much the way a sculptor might think or a painter. I don't see my works at all except as kind of visual objects, things that move. So you know, all of those instruments are things that go,
yeah.
Or ooh,
yeah.
Or ah, or make a they're kind of choreographed sounds. And for instance, in the that piece "Water Asleep," the word "water" was, as spoken and heard in that piece, was a female voice just saying the word "water" in a little piece of quarter-inch tape,
right.
About
right.
7 inches long, which I sampled and put through a very rigorous kind of analysis and.
You sampled, which means you took that sound and you fed it into a digital form, into a computer.
Yes, right,
okay.
Into the Synclavier.
Right.
And the Synclavier analyzes it and breaks it down into as many parts as I wish to break it down into, and then lets me manipulate the things that I've broken down. So, for instance, I can stretch the word out so that it goes, water, or water, or... or anything that I wish of, say, the glide, the off-glide from the E to the R sound, I can capture that sound and play it high or low, and it becomes, because the formant region changes, it becomes
right.
something absolutely different. And in fact, maybe if the next piece we could play, if you have it queued up there on the DAT, it's a piece that is based entirely, again, on these words, idea, green, water, sleep,
okay.
Furiously, and they are all stretched out to extraordinary lengths.
Okay.
You won't hear any of the words at all. But the piece, which is called Glacier, is a kind of a study in long, extended colors in this palette that keeps bleeding into each other, masking sounds emerging out of other sounds. That's, you asked, what to listen for.
Yeah, and what to listen for, how to listen to, not just what to listen for, but you said that you're somewhat like an artist and someone who's moving around colors and shapes.
Yes.
You want us to see not an image of an object, but rather the colors and shapes inside that?
In this particular piece, it's kind of a journey. I call it Glacier not only because of its slowness, but I can imagine floating through, disembodied through a glacier, the kinds of lights that you'd see.
Okay.
And,
okay, good.
It's,
yeah,
so it's a question of not only light, but kinds of motion and things masking each other, light, dark, large sounds, small sounds, very, very slow-moving sounds.
Okay.
And the best idea is not to try to get this piece to end. I find it most rewarding if you put yourself into a Zen state and listen to it very patiently.
Will this be a good headphone piece for people?
Oh, terrific headphone
piece. Good. Let's do that. Get the headphones out. Put them on. Close your eyes. Close the curtains because this is something that's going to play inside your head. George Todd's composition, Glacier. Just call it Glacier. Was this, while they're getting those headphones, was this the one that was played last year at the Seamus concert?
Yes, the one that was danced to.
The one that was danced to, yes. That was an extraordinary moment. Yeah.
Penny Campbell choreographed it.
Wonderful. Okay, headphones at the ready? Here we go. George Todd's Glacier. Thank you.
Out there?
G flat, eh? How did you arrive at arriving on a G flat chord at the end? Was that just happenstance?
Oh, no, I think there's a real kind of cosmic resonance in G flat.
He has said that to us while we were off the air, and I'm still pondering what the cosmic resonance of G flat is. It must have to do with food. No. That's all I can possibly imagine. George Todd, name of that piece again is Glacier.
Mm-hmm.
And you said you took 18 months to compose and assemble. You want to use compose? What word do you use for that?
Yeah, and develop the materials till it finally came. The materials had told me enough so that I knew the kind of piece that I wanted to perform.
Ah.
One quick note. I have not seen this CD in the Kmart cutout bin. Can you tell anyone might be interested where to get it?
Oh, yeah, that's right. I can start that out. Yeah, it's called Music from Seamus, the Society for Acoustic Music in the United States.
And Seamus is not, as you might spell, a cheap dick in a mystery movie.
Nah, ain't no Seamus like that.
And Music from Seamus is available just about only from mail order from the Society in University of Illinois?
Yeah, you can write Scott Wyatt at the University of Illinois, or you've got an address there, too, for its California.
I have a Los Angeles address here, and this is one way of getting it. This is 2550 Beverly Boulevard in Los Angeles, 90057. This is volume 2 of the Seamus set. There are 4 volumes now in that. You can also call Scott Wyatt. There's a number here at 217-333-2620. Once again, the Society for Electroacoustic Music in the United States. This is a Seamus Music Volume 2, 2550 Beverly Boulevard in Los Angeles. It's an amazing, amazing recording, many interesting pieces on there. But we're going to turn to something different, older of yours.
Yes, I've brought a piece that's made up entirely of FM sounds. That is, there's nothing that...
FM sounds doesn't mean FM radio. It just means...
No, it means frequency modulated sounds. FM sounds are pure electronic sounds made out of putting sine tones together, if you will, which, of course, this other music is too, but it all the other music came from samples. These are... This piece is entirely made up of instruments which I made up out of my head. I didn't have a model, say, of the human voice. I just sat down at my computer and I designed these instruments.
It's kind of like mixing your own paints from primary.
That's right.
Yeah.
Or making your own paints, period. Just going and finding the pigments and everything.
There is actually an allusion to paint that our most recent caller made. He said there are 2 reactions to the music that he just played. he was upstairs in his house painting, and he found the music very relaxing. He said a neighbor came by, and he said, are you using an electric paint sprayer? No, I painted by hand. He said, well, I thought that's what I heard.
Well, that piece... I'm flattered. That piece is... I'm working...
Subsidized by Pratt and... by Sears Paint.
What were you trying to think of? You couldn't remember the paint company. Sherwin-Williams.
There it is.
Well, at any rate, this piece that you're about to play was inspired by a piece of kinetic sculpture that I bet you've seen. It's in the... it's the New York Port Authority. It's in LaGuardia. There's one in LaGuardia, and there's one at the, I understand, at the Boston bus station.
Is this too. Like that giant Rube Goldberg type device?
That's right.
Oh yeah, that's an amazing piece. You could just sit there for hours and watch that from every angle.
Yeah. The first time I saw it, I missed my bus. I got hypnotized, as everybody standing around it was hypnotized to see which ball would drop next and go down which chute and which heliotrope. And it's such a delightful thing to look at and listen to. And it really inspired this piece, which I call Creati. For other reasons, I probably should have called it this kinetic sculpture, which didn't have a name as far as I know.
Nor do I. Let's listen to the music. This is when was this written?
Oh, you got me.
Okay.
Maybe 12 years ago.
All right. Creati by George Todd. Creati by George Todd, inspired by the kinetic sculptures out there in LaGuardia Airport in New York. Go to LaGuardia. Go check them out. They're really nice. And so is that piece. Very different from the others. I'm sure you weren't going for an underlying rhythmic motion, but there, because of the repetitiveness of the sort of striking figures in it, it gives that feel.
Uh-huh. Well, there was also a kind of underlying scheme there to... I envisioned a piece in which all the events would happen more or less one after the other. There's almost no counterpoint in that. Oh. And that's a challenge, you know, to have this kind of little trail of sounds running around like footprints, and except the animal keeps changing.
Kind of a technical challenge, or a challenge to suppress the kind of desire of one trained to do counterpoint counterpoint.
Yeah, it's a compositional challenge. And there are a few places where I cheated, but by and large I held to it.
Okay. This is very... how do you describe? It's a music where concentration is either demanded or rejected. I don't think there's a middle ground with what we're listening to. This is not exactly background music. I wonder how that fellow who was painting could paint through it sort of with half an ear. I know I couldn't.
Oh, maybe he does something to his hand.
Oh, good. Yes, there's an idea. We have something else. I think we should sort of bundle these pieces together and listen to one after another. They're very exciting.
Okay. This one is was a piece that I did for Penny Campbell, who's a choreographer and dancer at Middlebury, and with whom I've had several joyous collaborations. This piece was done in an unusual way. We talked generally about a kind of motion vocabulary that she wanted to have, and then she just let me do the piece, and she choreographed it afterwards.
A motion vocabulary. What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, she as dancer gave me some ideas of things that she would like to do.
And you translated the gestures, the motions into...
We talked a little bit about what the dramatic narrative roughly might have been.
Okay,
and
I see.
I had decided that I wanted to do a dream piece. Most of my work is based on dreams. And this is called Penny's Dream.
Great, let's listen to it. Penny's Dream by George Todd on the Calvos and Damian New Music Sesquihour.
them to move anywhere, and it feels like they... I don't know how long now, and it's just... They're about 29 times here. And they usually are, and I can't seem to get them from them.
They usually are, and I can't seem to get them.
They usually are, and I can't seem to get them. And usually are, and
this is really a problem, because here I am, sitting here with these feet that are... absolutely run into the fence. I have no option.
I think this is really a problem, because here I am sitting here with these feet that are so nervous I just can't seem to get them to move anywhere. And I feel like they start right under my feet, and I get feeling things move right around the home now. And it's just easier. I'm not going to be able to get them.
WGDR, Plainfield. Music by George Todd, a relatively new piece, and what is that called?
Penny's Dream.
Penny's Dream. It certainly was a dream. Amazing, amazing piece of music. Well, I'm disappointed we're at the end of our time today for our guest composer, George Todd from Middlebury. We'd love to have you back. I think that would be a good idea. These pieces are extensive, and they take their time about saying what they have to say, and I think we should have you back again. At least leave us with some music so we can give it a further airing.
No, thank you very much. Enjoyed it enormously.
Thanks very much for joining us on the show, George Todd.
I think next time we can request that he bring some of his earlier snappy music.
Oh, the snappy music. It's the snappy music question.
Speaking of question,
yes.
We did have the quiz, didn't we?
We did. The quiz was, does anyone out there own, or has anyone out there ever played for themselves a copy of Frank Zappa's The Perfect Stranger?
Another question might
yes.
be, does anyone out there have a copy of Herb and Mo and Herb's Vacation? Is that the name of it?
That's it. Is it Herb and Mo or Mo and Herb? Anyway, it's one of them pairings of Vacation, another Frank Zappa piece for a large orchestra. It was a huge, monumental piece. I think the London Symphony did it, and I've never seen it released. Great piece. You know, while we're still
we'll give you a prize if you send it to us.
We sure will. We'll get to keep it. That'll be the prize, and you'll get our gratitude. And boy, we're good at gratitude. While we're in the mode of these pieces, I think we should play the kind of granddaddy of all the that are created from the voice. As a matter of fact, I mentioned to George Todd that I had a copy of this produced from the original master tapes, and I forget his exact words, but he thinks it's one of the greatest pieces of the century.
This is the Messiah, right?
In a sense, it is. Karlheinz Stockhausen, who has now found his way into the hearts and minds of many a rocker, to my surprise, wrote a piece in the mid-1950s called The Song of the Youth, the Gesang der Jünglinge. And this is a recording which I was graced with by a composer who was a kind of an acolyte of Stockhausen's for a while, working on his biography. So here we have the opportunity. Get those headphones on again, by the way. This is a remarkable piece of creation done in what was a very primitive studio. You have to sort of cast your mind back 40 years to the time Stockhausen had himself and two assistants and a bunch of knobs and a three-channel tape machine, handmade three-channel tape machine, to create this out of instrumental sounds. No instrumental sounds on this one, I don't believe. I think this is all electronic. This is entirely vocal. Was there any oscillations? There was nothing but vocal on this at all? I keep thinking that there were other elements that he added. Well, in any case, I'll have to look up the history of that. But created largely out of a child's voice singing in German, I believe one of the Psalms. This is the Song of the Youth, the Gesang der Jünglinge, by Karlheinz Stockhausen.
I Strahlen könnte über alles. Gesang der Jünglinge, the Song of the Youths by Karlheinz Stockhausen.
Did we catch a couple of G-flats in that, too?
I think there must have been some G-flats.
Yeah, because I feel so much more whole.
You feel rich now.
Not quite. I have these outstanding bills.
Ah, must be it. That piece, I won't tell the story because it's just too much, but when I was young and first heard that piece, I carried around the LP until you could put the needle on the groove and see it through the other side, really. Let's listen to a little bit more of Frank Zappa from The Perfect Stranger, some of his concert music conducted by Pierre Boulez.
Thank you.
Well, here's where you heard it. Concert music by Frank Zappa. That's from a recording called A Perfect Stranger. Really extraordinary recording. Side two's good, too. This is a tape, but we'll get that CD in here one of these days nice and clean. Well, that's it for Calvus. We're going to leave you with something while Brett Sullivan's entry gets his great, huge pile of CDs ready. We'll leave you with from a recording called Mostly Railroad Music by Eldon Rathburn. We'll leave you with a little thing called Schoenberg versus Gershwin by Eldon Rathburn.
A production of Multimedia.